Thanks for listening to the Replatform podcast, sponsored by Crown Peak and Elastic Path and hosted by me, James Gerd. We put a lot of time and effort into bringing you interesting guests and amazing content all for free. Help us keep it that way. Let other people know in your network about the podcast. Share our posts on LinkedIn and Twitter to amplify what we're talking about. Best thing you could do to help, if you haven't already, is rate the show on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever else you listen and watch. So thanks, and we hope you enjoy the latest episode. So our topic today, it's a very interesting one because AI is being talked about everywhere, and there are lots of real practical use cases amidst some of the hype that's in the market. We're talking about something very practical today, which is delivering AI-powered adaptive shopping experiences for e-commerce. And we're speaking to Alan Gormley, who's the CEO at Shopbox. So welcome, Alan. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thanks very much, James. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time. And I'm interested to learn a bit more. We had a good chat a couple of weeks back. And I find it interesting because you're trying to find an improved use case for AI around like smart merchandise and recommendations. It isn't just waiting for people to tell them everything about their profile before it can make decisions. It's actually working anonymously as well as on known user data. So I think this would be a really interesting episode. Before we start, I start asking lots of annoying questions. Do you want to give people an intro, like who you are, what Shopbox is, your background? That'd be really useful.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, first of all, a pleasure to be here. I'm Alan Gormley. I'm CEO of Shopbox. I'm 26 years now in the AI industry. So I started in the insurance industry in Croydon and having done a few other things in my career. And then went to work for the largest AI company globally, a company called SAS Institute. If you guys know it, the UK headquarters is in Marlow, but it's out in North Carolina in the States. And I spent a lot of time there leading practices across EMEA mainly, and then a bit into APN globally, mainly around customer experience. So using data to understand customers so we can engage them better in sales and marketing. A lot of things like marketing automation. We were the first ones to bring things like real-time scoring to market in an industrialized way, that sort of thing. So I did that for many years, and then I decided I started to get a bit itchy, and I wanted to do something for myself, and I wanted to do something that I felt wasn't really being done. So what I found was that AI was, if we go back 5 or 6 years ago, 7 years ago, it was delivering massive value for very, very large companies, but nobody else got to play. And what I realized was that we could actually start to codify some of what we did and make it accessible to everyone, so that instead of it being big, risky, expensive projects that required people you didn't even know how to talk to, never mind work with, because data scientists are a bit different to most business people, I realized that we could actually, if we really focused in on some really specific use cases, we could do something that we could just switch on for anyone and make available to absolutely everyone. We're working with customers now where we're anywhere from 200,000 in online sales up to over 200 million and everything in between. And that's kind of something we pride ourselves in, that we can bring the same tech to absolutely everyone. So that's kind of the journey I went on over the last 26 years.
Amazing. And to be honest, I mean, I think this is where the last like 5 or so years around e-commerce technology has been about democratization of capability, where actually the barriers to entry are far lower, whether that's in SaaS e-commerce platforms, or SaaS niche vendors around that search match. So yeah, it's really nice to see that. So let's start with a bit of like the context and the market view and the consumer view, I guess, before we move into like the functional capabilities of the platform. But we talked about, and you spoke quite a lot about this, about the majority of the buying cycle now takes place outside an e-commerce store, whereas e-commerce stores are for a very specific part of the journey. How are you, when you're working with Joe's, how do you think retailers need to adapt their thinking with their understanding about this whole like merchandising play?
Yeah, so I might go back to some of the thought process we went through, because I'm really, there's quite a few stock things I say all the time, because we think a bit differently. Everything interesting starts with thinking. Okay, so I felt that our entire industry was too quick to jump to solutions and jump to conclusions and try and mimic other people. And when I looked at the market, I realized there was a massive disparity between the best and everyone else. And the best really is just Amazon. Some of the largest retailers globally are not really competing at a level where they engage customer and put customer at the center of the experience. They're just not competing with Amazon. And as I really started to realize that, I realized the personalization industry has kind of, there's thousands of personalization engines, but none of them are getting anyone closer to Amazon. But why is that? So we're, you know, our real competition is the biggest. It's not the guy down the street. And if we can start to address the biggest, then there's something really interesting happens. So as we looked at it, we went, well, why is this? And we realized that our entire industry is based around the idea that we need to know too much information about a customer and a product before we can put the two things together. Okay, now that causes a massive problem because customers make decisions in nanoseconds as they land on a site or in seconds. So you don't have 3-4 minutes of time to engage customers. You lost most of them in that time, which is why our conversion rates are so low. And you don't have time to get product moving because when you launch a new product, the first few days are where it's going to succeed or not succeed for most retailers. And if it succeeds, you radically reduce costs. So when we looked at it, we realized if we can solve those two problems, we can start to push back against Google owning the shopping cycle. Because what we saw happen was people come in, they're not engaged, can't find something straight away, straight back out into Google. So they're so used to being back out in Google, that's where they do all their shopping. And actually they come into our stores to price and fulfill. And it's too transactional. Whereas when we look at, and I'm really into looking at physical retail. I actually sometimes bring some of our employees into department store and say, look at what this looks like. Look what it feels like. How do we bring this to e-commerce? That's what we need to think about. Okay, so the thing for me is when you walk through the front door of a physical store, somebody starts to figure out what's interesting you, and they're trying to draw you into the store. They don't try to sell to you, they try to draw you in. So I started to look and go, that's what we need to do. If we can do that, we can prevent them going out into the high street, or Google or Facebook is our virtual high street. So that's everything for us started to flow from that. And it doesn't, you know, not everything we do is to address just that problem, but that's the fundamental problem that we're addressing and everything else flows into it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a nice way of framing it. Interesting, I was doing a training course from Mars yesterday with their sales teams about digital store optimization. And one of the key things I was saying to them is, you've got to think beyond just what your product visibility looks like, because the customer's journey started outside your store. So what's in their mindset and what's their expectation and what are they finding when they land? And you've got to tie up to your marketing channels and the promise that's being made, because often the landing page experience doesn't align with expectation.
It's, yeah. Actually, James, it's a really interesting one, because I've had people say to me, but the customer knows what they want. When, no, they absolutely do not. They know what they want at the end of the shopping journey. So when people say to me, oh, the customer knows what they want, I went, that's fine, because all your customers already have made all their decisions. And actually, there was a really interesting one in our very early days, an owner of a fashion retailer. She said to me, it takes 30 days for a woman to buy a dress. I went, really? And she went, well, yeah, but hang on. You got to remember that that buying cycle starts when she's sitting at home with her iPad on a Saturday night watching TV and go, hey, you know, I'm going to a wedding in 2 months. I might get a new dress. Now, she may never buy the dress, but that's the starting point.
Yeah.
And she said, if I can understand that person there, I can make sure that they're buying that dress in my store, or much more likely to. And that's the buying cycle. And I think that's where a lot, we've been kind of forced so much to the end. We think that that buying starts when somebody knows what they want. It doesn't. It starts way beforehand. If we can help them, our conversions go through.
Attract, your complete product discovery growth engine. Create relevant shopping experiences that convert into sales and grow online revenue with personalized search, merchandising, and recommendation solutions powered by AI. Find out more at attract.com.
Yeah, 100% agree. The ability to change merchandising based on the type of traffic that's coming in, and even from search, like search can be generic, like you know, a maxi dress. It's like, well, you don't even know what it is. Then it's a very specific one, and the difference in terms of put in product and solution versus guided and curated and helping people. 100% agree. Which leads me nicely onto my next question for you, which is, I like the way you're framing things about you want AI to act like an experienced store salesperson. So something that watches and really gets to know the customer rather than just chucks up products related to the category or the attribute they're looking at. How do you, for people listening, in your mind, how does this differ to the standard approach that AI-driven personalization is given?
It starts by the thinking thing. So AI personalization out there, nobody's putting any thought into the shopping journey. They're just saying, what I need to do is, at a particular point, I'm going to recommend some products. And say, at what point? The product detail page. I went, really? Why are you doing it at the product detail page? Well, because then I know they want to buy. And yeah, then you know they're at the end of the shopping journey. So you've missed all your opportunity again. So there's no thinking put into how do I engage a customer differently? How do I make it like that experience? So when we looked at it, we said, I'll give you that example. I'll give you a couple of examples of things that we see in e-commerce that I think are kind of, if we think about them deeply, you start to wonder why we do them. And I always say, like, physical retail has 150 years of figuring out how to lay out a store, how to behave in a store, when to engage customers, when to leave them alone. 150 years, and we're not stopping. We're still learning every day. We're changing all the time. But e-commerce has kind of left some of that behind. So I mentioned about when somebody walks through the door for the first time, we don't try and close a sale. We try and draw them in. And we try to expand their mind, but we're bringing them towards, away from that front door and into a place that has more depth. So that's the first thing we do, is we say, let's emulate that. Let's figure out how to get somebody deeper into the store. That's it. Don't try and convert them too quickly. Okay. The other thing that people do is, if we look at some of the pop-ups and things that happen constantly in e-commerce, they're nearly somebody screaming from the till, please buy, please buy, please. You wouldn't do that in a physical store. It's very, very disruptive. So we're kind of, because we're so much at the end of the shopping journey, we're trying to close all the time. And actually, if we just start to sell a bit through service, you just see people go much deeper into the store, consider more products, generally buy more expensive products, because most people will pay a bit more for a nicer product. So we tend to see a very natural upsell, even without doing cross-sells, which we do, but we actually see it happen earlier in the shopping cycle. People start to consider more products. So it's really thinking about what are the components that a shop assistant brings somebody through and try and emulate that online through loads of different components, but it's just constantly making that about the customer.
Yeah, that point you said about the jumping in someone's face at till point. There was a brilliant video a few years back where somebody basically did a UX parody of what the modern e-commerce site is, where somebody walked in the store and someone just jumped in their face and went, sign up. And it was brilliant. It's like, that's what it's like in a lot of sites. It's like, give me your email. Here's 10% off. Buy this product. You're like, whoa. I don't even know who you are. That's really funny. We're just doing a rebranding exercise at the moment. And one thing in the back of my mind is to start shooting videos like that. Walk out the door, 20% off, 50% off.
Like whacking them around the face. Okay, so let's go into a little bit more detail, because the people on our podcast want details. Yeah. They crave it. So let's talk about how you're different. So in terms of how you approach it, that makes perfect sense. What are the things that you are doing differently then? Like, how is that playing out in terms of what's happening in the
experience? Yeah. So that's really, so I mentioned PDPs. Okay, PDPs, great. It means people are engaged, but that is not where people start the shopping journey. So you got to think very deeply about what is a store. And we regard as an industry, we've kind of manipulated into it, because graphically, it's really easy to show a funnel. Graphically, it's really difficult to show an actual shopping journey. Okay, so what we do is we've abstracted it up into it's 3 or 4 or 5 stages. It doesn't make a difference. It's not. Never has been. Never will be. Okay, people have ideas, they forget things, they come back, and then suddenly they turn up and they buy it, even though you didn't think they were going to buy it yesterday. So we start to look at the site very differently. And we say, okay, so most people will start on PLPs. The listing page is the most important thing. Some of them search, some of them go through menus. Different people want to do different things. So we said, that's got to be the starting point, because we all know, and we've kind of given up on the idea of fixing this problem, that we have so many products that most of them are hidden on page 3 and above. And, we used to have the old joke, if you kill somebody, hide the body on page 3, because no one will ever find it. And it's still true. So we looked and said, how can we make a PLP react to a customer when we know nothing about the customer? And that's apparently an impossible problem to solve. So we looked and went, well, if it's impossible, that's fine, but we have to solve it, because that's what we do in a physical store. We solve that problem by putting a person there. Okay, so can we put something there that has that feeling that a person has when come in? Because, you can have a physical store with no people, but then it's up to me to find product, and probably I won't. Okay, so so we came up with the concept of an AI shop assistant that allows people to start shopping by example. So as they're seeing things they like, they can start pointing the store to be more about those products. And I talk about it a bit like, it's like when you're in a physical store and you walk towards a product, the things around it tend to be quite relevant to that product. So you naturally do that. It naturally kind of becomes about you just because as the way you walk through. So that's what we've put into a PLP. It's a visual thing, so it's very difficult to explain on a podcast, but I'd have to show people. But it's that way of engaging people differently. And then when they start to look at just one product, we start adapting the store. So the other thing that I think personalization engines have missed is the whole store should be adapted all the time. It shouldn't change to the extent that I get confused and I even really notice it changing, but it should be subtly changing all the time. Okay, so if I show that I'm interested in particular types of things, then we should find more things that inspire me, not just substitute products, you know, and we see this everywhere. You like the red rucksack. We got a blue and a green one and a brown one and a black one. Okay, they're buying a rucksack. Maybe they're going on holiday. Okay, so maybe we could think about that a bit more. And so we take a very fuzzy view to how we're trying to engage customers because we want to inspire them. And one of the really early ones we had was a fashion retailer where they said, they called us up after about 3 days live and they went, we've just seen sunglasses, beach towels and straw hats being shown together. And they went, that's what we would do in store. How in God's name are you doing that in a machine? I went, it's built to have that fuzziness, to understand the context of the customer, not just the product they're looking at. Okay, so it knows that those things are related because of some of the intelligent stuff we put underneath the covers in the AI engine. So it's really get out of the thinking of it's all about selling the product that's in front of them. You know, people are buying products because they want to do stuff or because they have some spare money or because they want to have a nice day. Okay, there are many, many different reasons people buy something. So start to make it about completing that project they're on rather than just being about the product.
Yeah, I think this is one of the big challenges for merchandisers generally is you have standardized product bundles, but they are business generated. They don't necessarily reflect what the shopper wants and how they're shopping across a solution idea. And if you take holiday shopping, it's so broad, isn't it? I mean, one person, it might be t-shirts and shorts. For others, it's a range of accessories. And having that ability to build up that knowledge base of how these items fit together is really important. So let's go on to the data bit. We're used to the fact that technology pulls in like purchase data, might pull in some browsing data. What are the data points that Shopbox is using? How extensive does it go in terms of the on-site behavioral and journey data? Does it pull in external data sources to, you know, enrich from things like CRM sources? Yeah, I'd love to hear a bit more about that.
Yeah, so I'm not going to go too much into the secret sauce, but I'll give you some thoughts on it. So you said a really good phrase there. A lot of people, you know, they have sales data and some behavior data. Here's the issue with sales data. It misses every decision point that the customer made. Okay, it's a fundamental issue with the way a lot of these systems are set up. So somebody bought, I'm looking in front of me, I have a phone. Okay, so somebody bought a phone. Oh, okay, so people wanted that phone. Maybe they did and maybe they didn't, but they went through hundreds of different decision points along the way. So behavior data is actually fundamentally important because then you can start to figure out, actually, they looked at a lot of things at the same price point, or they only looked at one brand, or they look at these brands together. So these brands seem to work well together, that sort of thing. So what we're really doing is in real time with many, many different layers of AI, looking at many, many different things that are involved in decisioning for a consumer. And that's really the fundamentally important stuff for us. A lot of CRM data, what we tend to do actually is deliver to CRM systems rather than pull data out of CRM systems. CRM systems are great, but they're at a segment level to a large degree. They give you segment level stuff on customers. And segments are great because segments allow us to focus marketing. Okay, but I see segments as marketing. Once a customer is in front of you, you are not marketing anymore. You're selling. That's an individual. And I don't care what segment they fit in. It is now time to understand a need, not a segment. So that everything for us flips once you have a customer in front of you. And I was doing the one, it's a very twee one, but you know, if your granny's into skateboarders, as far as I'm concerned, she's a skateboarder first and a granny second. Okay. You may have a different view of her, but as far as I'm concerned, she needs knee pads and she needs elbow pads and yada, yada. That's what I care about because that's what she cares about. So for us, behavior is about everything. And obviously we have sales data and all that sort of stuff. But what's really interesting is we're now starting to integrate into CRM systems where in real time, something like Salesforce can call us completely anonymously. So we give them the information they need to call us so we don't need to know the customer's name and email address and all and phone number and all that good stuff. And we can say, look, this customer has been looking at exactly this stuff right up to a second ago. These are the things that we've been recommending. These are the products they bought last week. And these are the things that go with the products they bought last week, yada, yada. So they can start to put the whole thing together and have a much more intelligent conversation with the customer. So we're kind of seeing it flow both ways at the moment.
And in terms of that integration with external like eCRMs, CRMs, are you integrated to the point where you're pushing product recs into their campaigns, or are you giving them the data to then generate those recommendations?
Both. So we're actually just launching email integration right now. So we do up to the second recommendations in marketing. So I've started to talk a lot more now to the people on the marketing side as well as people on the e-commerce side. And we're doing some, I think, quite clever stuff there. So we do things like, for instance, an awful lot of email campaigns, the decision on what a customer is shown is made when the email is sent. The customer might not open it for 5 or 6 hours or a day or two. And you may have out of stocks because you're promoting these products, whereas we actually are filling content as they open. So we're going back and say, give me up to the second information on this customer, up to the second information on the product, so I can put something in front of them that I know is not going to be a bad experience and is more likely to convert. So we're spending a lot of time thinking about how does something get consumed on the other end, rather than how can we be clever with data. Okay, clever with data comes after understanding how people get consumed. So and that's working really well, because one of the things I think we talked about it when we were prepping is, we've gone very heavy on the concept of a personal shopping page and a personal shopping space within the store, because I've always come from a belief that loyalty should be earned, not rewarded. Okay, so at the moment, loyalty systems are, when you show me you're going to be loyal, I'll reward you with discounts. I think, yeah, but we can have better customers if we can start treating them like that by understanding them up front. So we started to create the concept of personal shopping space that even anonymous customers can use. Okay, now, so that they go in and it feels like a loyalty system, they're getting interesting stuff coming at them, but they haven't given us any information. Okay, so we'll build loyalty with them and we'll earn that loyalty. But I think that's a much stronger way of doing it. Now, the reason that's important for me is because I don't see things as outbound and inbound anymore. I just see it as, we're here to create a personal space where email is feeding people back into a personal space. They buy more stuff, they get more emails, and it was just constantly keeping them in that space. They can go out into the general store if they want to, but I want to keep them in a personal space that stops them going to my competitors.
That all makes sense. Sorry, there was a lot of stuff going on one go.
You mentioned earlier about, obviously, you know, trying to improve the experience from an anonymous user, so not when you've built up a lot of knowledge, because that obviously becomes easier to do curation.
Yeah.
And you talk about engaging customers in the first click. So can we break down what that really means? Like, what engagement tactics can e-commerce teams realistically achieve when they don't know anything about the visitor?
So I one degree, you don't know anything to a large degree. So you know where they came from. You know how they got there. You know what they looked at. So you have enough to go on. You have exactly the same amount of information that a shop assistant has as somebody walks through the store and they just glance to the right because that's where the coats are. Okay, and then they start walking towards the coats. They're probably interested in coats. So that's a starting point, which means they're buying for winter. Or given the summer we're having, they're probably buying for summer right now. But anyway, sorry about that. That will date the podcast slightly. So you do have enough information. The thing is, generally the systems that work on that information don't know how to use it. So we're doing too little too late. There's too much heavy processing required. The AI is quite traditional AI. It needs more data than that. So we went back to the drawing board and we said, we need to work when we only know one thing about a customer. How are we going to make that work? And that leads to a whole different set of things that problems you need to solve. And that's what we started with. We're going to solve all these problems. When we solve all these problems, then we know, as somebody walks through the front door, we can know enough about them to start being about them instantly. So it's not a trivial problem to solve, but it's very worthwhile, because suddenly, you're not personalizing for 5% of customers, you're personalizing for 100% of customers. And you're doing it in places in the store where traditionally they have to do all the work, and now we can help them.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so you talked about this personalization piece, and you've got a For You page, which is, I guess, it's just an individual page for the customer where they see a specific view that's different per customer profile. Can you talk people through what what data is it is being collected on there? How extensive? What sort of features are there from, you know, recently viewed to recommendations? And also, how is that evolving? How quickly is that evolving as the customer's profile builds?
Yeah, so let's start at the end. It evolves click by click. So every time you look at a product, it evolves. And you got to do this in real time because we're all used to being shown stuff that we've already seen and think, why can't this be more intelligent? And from a data point of view, it's all behavior. It's not all behavior data, but it's mostly behavior data. And actually, it's less about the data and more about the features that you extract from that data. And that's where the real secret sauce is. But I'll give you a couple of examples. We have AI specifically to understand how particular brands work together in a store. So we started that in a luxury store where one of the founders said to us, you know, a Hermes bag and a Gucci bag, that's not a thing. So, but a Gucci bag and a Prada bag, that's a thing. I went, ah, okay. So there's groups of brands that behave in a particular way. And if somebody's into one brand, there's only so far they'll go out. It's not necessarily about the price point. But yeah, there's definitely groups within that. And we'd already done some work on, believe it or not, pet food to understand how different brands work together for food. And so we looked at that and applied it, and that worked really well. So by developing AI that doesn't have to understand every individual product, but understands how behavior relates to product, you start to build up layers where you can say, okay, this person is interested in this price point for this type of thing, this price point for this. These are the brands, these are the colors, yada, yada. That's all been taken into account so that we can be as relevant as possible, but also a bit fuzzy because we want them to stumble across things. We want people to go, oh, I didn't think of that. Okay, that's a nice feeling we're shopping. Shopping is not a transactional thing. Most of the stuff we buy, we don't need. Okay, we don't need everything we have in our houses. We stumble across and go, oh, that's nice. I like that. And that's a nice feeling. So we want that feeling to come out. The other thing is, tracking things like sizes is really important. You know, if we take the personal shopping page, and that's kind of just a pivot page for us, it's just one place where a lot of things happen, but actually we're pervasive through the site. Even in things like blogs, we're starting to work in where we can start to associate the right products for this customer within the context of the blog. But the personal shopping page, there's things like promotions. Now, promotions is a terrible experience online. It's random product that's never available in my size. Like, I'm not an XXXL. I haven't been. I'm not going to be one at this stage of my life. So we just do some simple tracking to make sure that everything that is put in front of a customer has some relevance to them. Okay, so we want to take the sales experience away from that bargain basement feeling where we say, go find it yourself and rattle around inside the bargain basement, to the shop assistant feeling where they say, oh, you like that? Hey, we got one on promo. You're going to love this. Okay, and you're probably not going to buy it. The point is that somebody is delighting you in front while you're there, and they're just engaging you and getting to you deeper all the time and starting to allow you to consider other things. So that's kind of conceptually how it works. From a data perspective, the other thing that's really important is we only work on first-party data. And I've always been against the idea of third-party data because people, I don't know, thankfully we're getting rid of it now, but like when we started Shopbox, we talked a lot about, you put a pixel on your page, and that's great because that means you can remarket to your customers, or as I like to call it, rebuy your customers, because it's you paying Google a second time to bring the same customer in. I said, but here's your problem. That pixel is collecting data that is also being sold to your competitor. So information about your customer's behavior inside your store is being sold to your competitor. And that is not a good business model. That should not have been allowed in the first place. So we have always taken the view, what happens inside your store is plenty of information for us to understand how to make your store better for a customer. We get great conversion rates and we don't need to take data from other stores, which means we also don't need to sell your data to other stores. That's not a good business model as far as I'm concerned. So everything for us is first party data. It's all about the store is the important thing. That's what we're trying to make better.
Yeah, and I think those additional layers of intelligence are so important. Like, sizing is one of the biggest frustrations, where you get a recommendation that's not available in your size and you think, great, you got me excited about it and now you can't sell it to me. But then one other common frustration that people have is when real-time reacts so quickly that it doesn't understand that there might be an outlier decision that's been made. A good example is birthday gifting, when somebody who's only... from men's suddenly buys from women's for a sister, a wife, or an aunt, whatever it might be, and suddenly gets told to buy loads more dresses. Well, what's your view and approach to that?
Yeah, like I think because you're looking, because we're tracking history from the second we see the customer, as they evolve, the weightings evolve with them. So if I'm generally buying men's stuff, then I'm generally interested in men's stuff. And if I sporadically buy women's stuff, then it's an anomaly. So you're waiting, we're always waiting between what's the long-term view of the customer and what's the now view of the customer. So what they're buying today is more important to them than what they bought in the past. So you've got to weight it towards what's interesting to them right now. But we've got that long tail and we blend everything. So one of the things that really annoys me about shopping on the internet is, you know, you look at the phone and then the phone follows you around for 2 weeks. And then you look at a lawnmower and suddenly the only thing you need is a lawnmower. And then you look at a cup and the only thing you need is a cup. And actually, I need all those things. So we take the view, you blend, you know, somebody doesn't come in because they have one need. Hopefully, as good retailers, they have loads of needs off us at any point in the future. There are outliers where you're now, you know, where it's very, very difficult and nobody can solve the problem, you know, where there's just random stuff happens and allow it to happen. But I think when you combine what we do with good search on site, which we are looking at search at some point, we may do that. But I think when you combine those two things, you've kind of satisfied everyone. And I think the other thing for me that people, especially data people, often get wrong is they think it's about being perfect. I'm not trying to find the perfect product for a customer because they may not even know what it is themselves yet. I'm trying to inspire them. And I'm going to get it wrong the odd time. But as long as we're generally right and they're stumbling across things that are interesting, it's a great experience for them. And for me, it's all about if we make it a great experience and we make it about service and we allow them to stumble across things they wouldn't have seen before, we expand the customer, they become more loyal, they buy more stuff off us and everybody's, you know, everyone's having a better day.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the key goals of product discovery. And a lot of businesses I work with, they struggle where there's an ever-decreasing circle of products that keep getting pushed and sold because they're the most visible. And then you don't get people shopping across brands or ranges or up price. So that is right. And I've got a question related to that actually, is about business controls. Because you know, what tooling does the platform have to help businesses put rules in place to stop certain association happening? A good example, I've worked with multi-brand retailers where they can't put brand A and B together because of their contractual obligations.
Yes.
We've said, I hate brand B, don't put me next to them ever.
Yeah. So constraints, like I call them constraints rather than rules, because what we don't want are a huge number of rules. What you end up there with is a system that is being micromanaged by a merchandiser, and now the merchandiser doesn't get to do their day job. So our system is set and forget. You set it, it does its thing, it learns about customers. So you put broad constraints in. We generally have things like price constraints. Don't show somebody cheap beside expensive. It's not a good experience for them and it's not a good experience for you. The brand is a very important one. Sometimes we have things like events. So I'll give you an example. It is Mother's Day for one retailer. They had a set of products that were just for Mother's Day. They basically have to discount them to next to nothing on the Monday. So we put a constraint, very simple constraint that says if they're in a Mother's Day product, make sure you keep them in Mother's Day products. Don't allow them out into other products. But if they're out in other products, allow them in. So all those things. So you give them broad, very, very broad guidance in the same way you would to a human. You know, you don't tell a shop, you don't follow them around and say, that shoe and that shoe and that shoe. You follow them around and say, that stuff at the back, we need to get rid of it. You've given them a broad route. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's very, very broad routes. There's a couple of things you mentioned there. When you went like that around, you know, we're selling fewer and fewer products. It's a fundamental issue. And actually, our AI is designed from the ground up to do the opposite of that. Okay, so nearly all AI in retailers, people are like this, also like this, which is driving people towards bestseller products. So we're selling more and more to fewer and fewer products to more and more people, and creating a massive long tail problem. The other problem that has, which is even more fundamental, is new product has no clicks. So new product is fighting to be seen. And it's the most important product on our catalog because it's high margin. If we get it moving, we can maintain those margins. So when we looked at the problem, we said, we can't go down that route. We can't have an AI that is pushing people always towards bestsellers. Okay, bestsellers are important, but they are generally more competitive and they're generally available to everybody else in every other store, so they don't differentiate us. So we really focus on how do you get a product where you have no data from a customer about that product and get it to sell. So when we put a product live, about 5 seconds later, it's finding customers. And we actually, on the long tail side, we just did a webcast a couple of weeks ago, and one of our retailers was on it, and we just published a case study with him recently. But in the case study, he was quite active on the webcast, because he said, "This is amazing. I set this thing live 3 months ago. I haven't touched it since, and I can't believe it's doing what it's doing. It's brilliant." But then I said, "We have a supplier we used to who was long tail. People weren't overly interested in our stuff. So we used to reorder every 3 months. We're now ordering every week. So within 3 months of going live, we start take long tail product, and it's starting to move into bestseller product. So we're creating bestseller product by just understanding product much better rather than just going after bestsellers all the time."
Yeah, I think that's
an interesting place to be. But
yeah, that's a really good point.
The other thing with the sorry, James, I cut across you there.
No, I was just going to say, it's a really interesting point, because it's not just about getting the right product to the customer. It's also helping merchandising teams to better improve sell-through rates, because one of the big issues in merchandising teams is loads of redundant stock that's not shifting, sat in a warehouse that's a cost to the business, but they might not reorder.
Yeah.
And the ability to either get rid of stuff quicker or understand actually that there is better demand, but it's just they haven't serviced the customer properly. So yeah, interesting point. Sorry, you were going to say something else.
Yeah, no, I think it's a fundamental thing for us, and retail to me is not about finding the perfect product for the customer. It never has been. It's a balance between we have to make money at the end of the day, and we have many different products for many different reasons. But our differentiation tends to come from the stuff that's at the edge, and if we can't get that moving, then we've AI engines claiming they're making loads of sales, but actually they're just selling products that we're going to sell anyway. We found that to be a huge issue. But the great thing is, the second you start talking to retailers about this, they light up, because these are fundamental issues they have. And the fact that somebody actually wants to talk about those issues rather than just talk about we sell more stuff, it makes it a very different conversation with them.
Mm. And from a technology point of view, what if somebody's interested in you, what are the integration paths? Is it purely JavaScript? Do you have APIs? And then I guess the second question to follow up on is how do you help retailers measure the impact on performance? Because this is one of the big things people worry about adding another third party, is what's it doing to my page speeds, etc.
So let's start with integration. So integration is very simple. If it's something like Shopify, we pretty much do everything for you. So we've customers who've gone live the day after they signed the contract. Generally, we'd allow a week to two, because people want to review designs and all that sort of stuff. But we do all the work. So there's no real cost to the retailer of getting up and running. And that's important for me, because one of the first retailers I ever talked to about some of the ideas was, if you say IT, you got to leave the room. So why? And said 18-month queue. And okay, fine. That's a done deal then. We're not going in 18-month queues for anything. Things like Shopify or BigCommerce, WooCommerce, Magento, really, really simple. We're on quite a few bespoke platforms where they've had to do some integration, just JavaScript insert and a couple of product feeds. So it's a really simple integration. We open up all our AI to API, because one of the things I found in the industry is there's a lot of it isn't surfaced. And there's no point in us doing things online and then somebody calls you and your Salesforce system is doing something completely different. You need consistency. So we opened the whole thing up to API very early. We had a handful of customers using the API. It's very, very simple. And we're basically managing more or less everything. All they have to do is call us when they need a recommendation, or they need to know what promotions might work, or what a customer's bought, or that sort of thing. And I think a lot of retailers will start to do really interesting stuff with that. So as an example, it's not just about other systems. We had one retailer where they had payment information in a page, and we said, we're not putting JavaScript on a page that has payment information in it. It's not a good idea. And then that's fine. We'll just do it by API, and then we can have everything without any security issues. So that's that puts us in a really good place from that perspective. So that's the technology. Everything we do is being measured. Okay, so obviously we're tracking behavior, which means we can see everything that's going on so that we can reassure the retailer of what's happening. And so we tend to give access to a dashboard usually a week or two after they go live, when enough data is gathered that it makes some sense to look at it. And so they can see the sales going through Shopbox per day, conversion rates, the average order values, changes in behavior, like how people are browsing differently, how much time they're spending on site. We tend to see about 5 times longer on site. They tend to look at about 3 times more product, and they tend to convert about 3 times the rate. So, but they've got a dashboard to see that day in, day out. And that's really important for us, because otherwise, especially because we're a set and forget system, the irony is, systems you have to put a lot of work into, you have loads of confidence, but you're burning through people to try and keep them running. But you have loads of confidence because you have no choice, you have to keep using them every day. Whereas when it's a set and forget system, people kind of forget they have it. So the dashboard is really important, because it reminds them of the value they're getting from it, but they don't have to put the effort in. So we keep it very straightforward for them.
And in terms of roadmap and what's coming next, what can people expect? Like, are you an integration with any new platforms? Are you looking to expand into other channels for pushing out the product intelligence? I know you talked about when we talked a few weeks back about native Klaviyo integration, for example. So can you walk people through some of the key, I guess, roadmap plans?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about short term first of all. So we're just rolling out Klaviyo integration right now. So that's going very well. And the reason we picked Klaviyo is, to be honest, it is the best in retail. It's the most integrated into how retail works. And so we started with Klaviyo. That's going really, really well. We've got a big pipeline of people who just want the Klaviyo integration. The important thing there, again, is everything for us is simple. So the customer actually doesn't really need to do anything to get Klaviyo integration. So you can take a bog standard newsletter and suddenly make it into a highly personalized newsletter with next to no effort. So the whole point for us is try and take effort away from retailers. They have enough to do. We're also doing some stuff that's making us much more pervasive through the site. So we have some clever stuff that allows us to basically take any page on a site and start creating ideas for customers based on the context of the page they're in and their past behavior. So if they're in a blog that's about what to wear this summer, then we're showing them stuff that's interesting for them given their behavior, but is also relevant for that summer blog. So it's not just PLPs and PDPs and homepages anymore. It's every place they go on a site. We are looking at wider channels. So the Klaviyo integration is the start of us looking at more stuff that's outside and more to do with marketing, because that's a place that we can really really engage people. So we are looking more at the social channels, and most of the tech we are currently using for Klaviyo actually fits very well in there. So we're looking at that once we get people up and running with that. Things like search are becoming more important. A lot of people have been coming back to us saying their search engines, they don't like them. They take too much time and say, we switch you on, we never touch the system and it finds products. Our search engine, we're managing every day and it doesn't find some of our products. Why don't you do search? And eventually I went, well, if enough people ask, then maybe we should do it. So we are looking at it. And I'm hoping we'll be out in H1 next year, we'll be out with the search side of things. Integration is really important. So Klaviyo is the starting point. We are looking at other email engines. E-commerce engines, we're on at least 12 at this stage. We just got EKM live. So EKM is in a lot of small retailers in the UK. Really nice platform. Very nice people to work with. We just went live with the first customer on Blue Park. So we're looking at some of the platforms that are more in market as well as the large ones. So everything from Shopify through to BigCommerce, WooCommerce, even EpiServer, and Salesforce. We're looking at SAP right now. So we're pretty much covering everything. But I'm much more interested in things like chat and loyalty. Okay, because people spend time in loyalty systems to spend a lot of money on. Chat doesn't have a lot of context for what people are doing. We have that context. So I want to make chat much more intelligent, and you're not starting a conversation with the usual, tell me what you want, and say, I'll put it with him anyway. Regardless of what you say, you're still going to get exactly the same response. Whereas we believe we can do something much more clever with chat. So we're just starting to look at that much more deeply. then so really that's there's a lot of different directions at the same time. There are other shopping moments we want to capture as well. There are other reasons people shop, and it's not all about product for me. Sometimes it's about presence. Sometimes it's about presence where I don't actually understand anything. So, for instance, I have a niece and nephew. I have no idea what a 12-year-old wants, and I never will. Okay, it's not something that exists in my world. Well, once or twice a year, I need to find something. So we're looking at how do we help people in those moments, because those moments can be very, very valuable, and they repeat. If I get something in your store today for a 12-year-old, I'm coming back at Christmas and I'm coming back this time next year, because it's just too difficult for me to figure it out. So there's a lot of other shopping moments we're looking at that I think could be very interesting.
Cool. Excellent. Look, thanks for taking the time to share a bit more about the platform. If anyone wants to probe further or challenge on some of the things we talked about, or even get a proper demo, how do they reach out?
Yeah, so they can email me directly. It's alan.gormley. I'm sure you'll share this on the podcast, but alan.gormley@shopbox.ai. My LinkedIn profile, look for Alan Gormley, Shopbox. And then shopbox.ai is our website. So just jump on there, fill in the contact form. And we'll be relaunching the website, a completely new website with new branding in a few weeks. But the contact us page will still be there. And I would love to show people platform, because the other thing for us, James, is I come from an industry that tells people about stuff that might exist on PowerPoint. We don't like PowerPoint. We either show a product or it doesn't exist. So we like showing, and we like people to understand it by looking at how it affects our customers. So we love giving demos and getting people's reaction to it. Very happy to do that anytime.
Cool. So yeah, if anybody does want to push further and see it in practical uses, do reach out. And Alan, thanks very much for coming on. I've enjoyed the episode. I hope everyone listening has too. Keep it open for your next episode. We drop one every Tuesday. And remember to give us that rating wherever you're listening or watching. Really does help to boost the visibility. Thanks, and look forward to catching up with you all next week. For more information on this topic, head over to replatform.fm for our audio podcasts. To discuss a project, or if you'd like to chat about any of the topics covered in this episode in more detail, please reach out to myself, James Gird, or my co-host, Paul Rogers, via LinkedIn and Twitter. Thanks again for listening, and keep your ears peeled for the next episode.